Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This Ben Jarofsky Show, Benny J. Bonus Interview, is brought to you in part by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 in District 8, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and the Chicago Federation of Labor. Benny J., take it away.
Bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Friday, January 17th, 2020, in the year 2020. But of course, it's a podcast, so you're listening at any time. So maybe by the time you're listening to this, all the issues we're discussing, young Dennis, will have been resolved. I hope so.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. As we do with every bonus show, I ask my distinguished guests to introduce themselves. So I'm going to start with distinguished guest number one. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Mary Wisneski, and I'm the transportation reporter for the Chicago Tribune.
That's correct.
No, thank you, Robert Mueller. And distinguished guest number two.
Hi, I'm Charlie Johnson. I'm a homepage editor at the Tribune.
All right.
That's correct.
Robert Mueller weighing in again. All right. Two Tribune employees. Lots of things I just want to say at the top. Number one, people who listen to my show all the time know Mary and Charlie, that I'm always making fun of Tribune editorials, but they also know that I'm always applauding the journalists who do the hard work and giving you guys shout outs and stuff like that. Home subscriber, Tribune, home subscriber. I'm showing my newspaper.
All right.
I'm a home subscriber
to
Chicago.
You're
so welcome.
Can I get you some coffee? How about a donut?
Yeah. How about an egg roll, Mr. Gladstone? There you are now. And here's the trivia question. Mary knows the answer, so we're not going to ask Mary. We're going to ask Charlie, put him in the hot seat. You are technically the third Tribune employee who has walked through that door into this little studio. Mary was the second because she was here before you. For 10 trivia points, Charlie Johnson, who was the first Tribune employee to walk through that door and sit here in front of that microphone for the Ben Jarofsky Show? Go.
I'm going to say it's columnist Rex Hubke.
That would be incorrect, but it's close.
Okay.
You found the one liberal. Mary, you know the answer. Give the answer.
It's Eric Zorn, the other one.
The other liberal. Love Eric Zorn.
Did he sing?
No, he did not sing. I should have asked him to sing. People do a lot of singing on this show, myself included, but I will not sing today. Anyway, yeah, Eric Zorn came in and we had a nice chat, and I should bring him back because it was a lot of fun talking.
And we should get Rex Hubke.
We should definitely get. He's a funny dude, man. Mm-hmm. Was it today's or yesterday's? The headline was hilarious. No, it was yesterday's. Anyway.
Can't let too much truth leak out.
Yes.
Ahead of the hearings.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. He's a funny guy, Rex Hubke. And he's always funny because when he has these columns where he deals with the Trumpsters who write in to tell him how much they hate him and how stupid he is. He just cracks me up. Yeah. Anyway, all right, let's get down to business. Serious business at the Chicago Tribune. Mary, in addition to transportation writer, is also the author of a book on Nelson Algren. I'm going to do everything I can to refrain from launching into a discussion of Nelson Algren, a subject that we both care greatly about. But you are here, Mary and Charlie, in your capacity as members of the Chicago Tribune's union. Am I correct in that?
That is correct.
All right. So, Charlie, why don't you talk a little bit, just bare bones, about the unionizing effort at the Tribune, because you've been on my show before, the old show I had, but update people on what went down with the union at the Tribune.
Sure thing. So when I was here last, we were, I believe, in the process of organizing. I don't think we'd been recognized by the company yet. But we organized a union in late 2017 through early to mid 2018. We were eventually given voluntary recognition, or what's sometimes known as card check recognition, because we had more than 85% of the newsroom signing union authorization cards. And we started negotiating a contract with Tribune Publishing in 2019, and we're continuing that process now in 2020. The sort of other piece of company news that maybe goes along with this is, subsequent to our organizing, a host of the other papers in other cities that the Tribune owns, Tronc, now Tribune Publishing, they changed the name back, also organized. And so a number of other papers, the Hartford Courant, the Allentown Morning Call, the Virginian Pilot, the Daily Press, the Chesapeake, Capital Gazette, which had the shooting, if you remember a little ways back, was a small paper in Annapolis. Mm-hmm. They're all also bargaining contracts with Tribune Publishing at the mm-hmm. same time. So we were sort of the early stage of a wave that kind of washed over the company.
And what was some of the motivation, Mary, for your organization?
The motivation was that there had only been one small raise in 8 years. Health benefits, or the cost of them, kept going up. So people were actually getting less money than they had when they started. And we weren't competitive with other newspapers. And we were losing a lot of quality people because they felt that they couldn't afford to continue being employed by the Tribune. I heard the joke that, you know, the Tribune is my favorite charity, but I can't afford to support it anymore. And so that was what motivated the unionization. And people who were against it at first really thought about it and realized that this is something that we had to do. And as Charlie said, I mean, it caught on. It's an infection that's good to spread around, this unionization effort that's happening in a lot of different papers.
Well, full disclosure, I am a member of the same union that Charlie and Mary of. Other full disclosure, my show is sponsored by unions. Other full disclosure, I'm a union guy through and through, and pretty much am on the side of every union that's fighting for existence. So God bless you guys.
Does this make you a comrade?
Yes, I am a comrade in solidarity okay. with Mary and Charlie and all the other journalists at the Chicago Tribune. The part of the reason why... there's concern about the Tribune is that you have new owners. We'll get into all that, Alden Capital. But let's just talk about the state of the Tribune now before we get into Alden. Since you became a union paper, Mary, I'll start with you. Was there improvement? Did you get a sense that management was going to pour more money into the paper? Was there a sense that this had stalled cuts, or were things pretty much the same?
I do believe that it stalled bad things happening at the paper. It also gave people hope that there were good things coming, and gave us a seat at the table for what's going forward. So I think that it's already been a tremendous improvement. It also created solidarity within the newsroom. I think that a lot of people, the Tribune, regarded themselves as kind of being in silos a little bit. You know, I'm in food, and people in food don't talk to people in investigations. And I think the union changed that, and we feel like we're more one paper now.
Yeah, it was once described to me by a crime reporter as the 14 warring tribes of the Chicago Tribune, and it definitely feels a lot different now. I think it broke down a lot of barriers between people, and did create a sense of, you know, to use the union buzzword, solidarity, in a really healthy way, in a way that made people feel happier, more connected with their colleagues. I also think it did stall some eventual bad things. It's slowed down job cuts, in my opinion. It has helped keep health insurance lower than it would have been, mm-hmm. although our costs have still gone up. And we've had sort of a tool to deal with issues that have arisen, small things, but things that are important, like disability access in the building, mothers' rooms, things of that nature. So it's already paid some small dividends, but the meat and potatoes of the contract is really what we're after now.
Now, I talked about this, Charlie, a couple of years ago when he was on, Mary. Curious your thoughts on this one. The Tribune had always been the non-union newspaper in Chicago,
right.
The Sun-Times, my beloved mm-hmm. bright one, was the union paper. Was it a philosophical adjustment for Tribune employees to embrace the notion of a union?
I think it was for some people. Going back into my own history, I used to deliver the Tribune, and my father, who was a union man, would not allow it out of the garage. It could be in the garage, but it couldn't be in the house because we weren't having that non-union paper and what they said about Mr. Roosevelt in our house. But I think that there's, you know, been a definite change at the paper when people realize that the company wasn't looking out for them the way that it should look out for them. There wasn't this protections that they weren't getting the raises they used to. They were still doing the hard work, and they weren't getting recognition by the company. And so people recognize that we have to stand up for ourselves.
Yeah, that is one thing I do want to underscore just a bit is, you know, the Tribune has historically been an anti-union paper, both in its editorial stances and in some of its corporate policies. There was, you know, a pressman strike in the 80s that they broke. And for a long time, it didn't have a union because it treated its employees very well. It paid above union scale. I've heard stories about flying correspondents first class. I think if two Tribune people got married, I've heard this story, that they got a set of silver courtesy of the Tribune. And so when you're paid well and you're treated well and there's opportunity for advancement, in a certain sense, your boat's already floated, let's say. And as time went on, especially after 2008, after the bankruptcy, after, you know, smartphones changed everything, pay sunk, opportunities for advancement sunk, working conditions grew worse. And, you know, we can pick up a Sun-Times contract that's publicly available through the Chicago Local and see that, you know, this person who has the same amount of experience as our counterpart, who we believe does as good, if not better work, is making $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 less. And it really, you know, at that point, doesn't take a genius. You know, it's pretty much simple math.
All right. And so that was the situation that led Tribune employees to have a vote. I always tease Charlie that the vote at the Reader was a higher percentage than the vote at the Tribune. Last time I saw you was at a wedding, I want to say.
This
and
is true.
I threw it in his face again at the wedding. I think it was 100% at the Reader and 90% at the Tribune or 80%.
We didn't have to have a vote because we had so many people signing on the cards.
Well, it was coming at me right back.
It was a bit overwhelming, the amount of support that we got.
All right. Okay. Enough of the Reader baiting. So you're in the middle of negotiating for your first contract, which I know from experience, Charlie and Mary, is a very difficult process to go through. You get the word that there is a new owner. So, Charlie, why don't you start by explaining Alden and Alden Capital?
Sure. So Tribune Publishing, it was primarily owned by two men, at least was. One is the richest man in California, and the other is a guy named Michael Farrow, who, you know, you can share your own stories of if you'd like, used to own the Sun-Times. Michael Farrow, after a pretty embarrassing Me Too story was released, stepped down as chairman, I believe it was, of the Tribune board, and just maintained his shares. He sold those shares recently to a company called Alden Global Capital. It's a hedge fund based out of New York. And it's particularly bad news for us, we believe, because Alden has a reputation as essentially destroyer of newspapers. They're not people, to put it simply, who are interested in being in the news business, putting out a high quality news product and taking monies from it and having to adjust, you know, where it spends money and how many employees it employs. They're in the money business. They're in maximizing their return on their investment in the short term, more than likely. And they do that by slashing costs and keeping prices high or raising prices, knowing that for a lot of people, especially a lot of older people, to speak frankly, they're going to get a Tribune dropped on their doorstep every day until the day they die.
And he looks at me and he says that.
A Sun-Times too, possibly. Yeah. You know,
no, three. And one, two, three.
Me too. I'm never giving them up.
Right. By reducing those costs, and costs in the newspaper business oftentimes are people, you know, the people who write the words and take the photos and lay out the pages, and keeping those prices high, they're going to be able to create a really nice fat profit margin in the short term. They'll degrade the product of the paper. They'll turn off people who would be the subscriber base for the future, people who are now in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and really leave, you know, what they have done is they've left places like the Denver Post really husks of what they once were. The term in the industry, it's kind of an insider baseball term, but it's ghost newspapers. They don't do a lot of original reporting. They don't do the investigations that they're known for. They're thin, they're full of wire content, and they don't really represent the cities that they are in anymore. They don't hold the local politicians to account. They don't steward the tax dollar effectively. And the people who get them aren't going to stick around. Let's put it that way.
And the irony of this is that it's that the Tribune has been doing well. It's been debt free. It's been getting digital subscribers. It's been more of a success story than a lot of newspapers right now. So what we're seeing here is almost kind of like anti-capitalism. If you remember the story of the goose that laid the golden eggs, and if the goose would keep laying golden eggs if you took care of it and fed it and made sure that it was comfortable. But instead, companies like this want to kill the goose, and then they find they have no golden eggs left, but they don't care.
Yeah.
Because they're moving on. And this is this sort of thing is a tragedy for our community if they get away with this, because you know there's an awful lot of worms under an awful lot of rocks in this city, as we know, and we need as many people as we can to be turning those rocks over. And if we don't have them, you know, the corruption's going to get worse. It's going to be a burden for our democracy. We're not going to have a democracy if we don't have journalism to tell people what's going on in their government.
I would like, this is from the Wikipedia page. I just have to share this with folks. This is from the Wikipedia page about Alden. Alden has a reputation for cutting costs by reducing the number of journalists working on its newspapers. In March 2018, Margaret Sullivan, the media columnist for the Washington Post, called Alden, and I quote, one of the most ruthless of the corporate strip miners, seemingly intent on destroying local journalism, end of quote. Alden has received critical coverage from the editorial staff at the Denver Post, who described it as, quote, vulture capitalists after multiple staff layoffs. So that's sort of the reputation that precedes you. Have there been any kind of contacts by Alden, the new shareholders, and the union? Anything like, have they sent any messages to you or anything?
We have not gotten messages from them except what's happened this week, which is an announcement that they want to take buyouts. They want to, people with 8 years or more experience are being offered buyouts. And what that's meant in the newspaper business, and Ben, you know, I was at the Sun-Times, so I've gone through this particular dance before, is they want to do buyouts. They're usually in advance of layoffs. And so they're trying to get rid of veteran journalists in order to, cut margins and make more money. And what that means is we'll have less people doing the kind of important work that I just talked about. And there's apparently no bottom to this. They haven't told us how much money they're aiming for and how many buyouts they're going to need in order to prevent layoffs. So the mood, the morale in the newsroom like now, I wouldn't say it's as bad as like Berlin in spring of 45, but it's not good.
It's frustrating, and it's an extremely demoralizing experience to see good work go out the door day in and day out and get an email, the first two or three paragraphs of which says, you guys are doing great. We're hitting we're hitting our digital subscription targets. We're exceeding them. We've got no debt because when we sold the LA Times, we got to use that cash to pay it all off. We're in a good, strong position. The company paid over $60 million in cash dividends this year alone to shareholders, and it intends to continue to pay quarterly dividends to shareholders. A dividend is just cash. Mm-hmm. They send it to your account, essentially. And then turn around after saying that and letting $60-odd million in cash walk out the door and say, yeah, but some of y'all got to go. And that's what they're doing. At a certain point, if we can't sort of arrest this pattern, the paper will degrade to the point where it people won't want to pay for it and they won't want to read it. And that's what we're really concerned about. I think there's there's definitely, for people listening out there in radio land, I think there's definitely a tendency when this interview maybe started to be like, the newspaper industry is hard up. And yeah, it's another bad owner, but God, the Tribune has had a bunch of bad owners. Why does this matter to me? And this is a different situation. We view this as an existential threat. The company faces challenges in adapting its business model for this new digital era, yes, but it is actually in a healthy position. And instead of investing in newsrooms, instead of investing in journalists, instead of hiring, instead of coming up with new and innovative ways to tell stories and make money, they're kicking cash to shareholders and asking people to leave.
Now, when you say you were asked to leave, the buyouts were offered, was this offered in individual emails to, sent to every single Tribune employee?
Those are forthcoming. We just got word that there would be buyouts. The union is in the process of going over the terms with the company, and then those would be offered to individuals.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And they're looking for the last day of people who are willing to leave to be in early February. So it would be soon. This is some. This is a decision that people are going to have to make quickly, and there's a lot of agonizing going on in the newsroom.
Well, let's talk about some of the agonizing that's going on, Mary. I think you said it, the offer for a buyout is sort of an enticement, which is followed by a layoff, which is like a slug to the head. So is there a cynical game going on in people's minds where they think, well, I don't want to retire now. I don't want to take a buyout, but this may be a better deal than what's right around the corner.
I think there's a lot of sleepless nights. I know this from talking to people, a lot of people talking to their spouses and saying, what are we going to do? You know, should I take this and maybe get a little money to get a start in another career, or should I continue to fight it out and do the work that I love? And that's something that's important to realize, that people are at the Tribune not to get rich. I mean, let's face it. They're there because they love the work and they love telling these stories. They love doing these investigations because these investigations matter. The investigation that was just done by the Tribune on the seclusion rooms in Illinois schools is a heartbreaking story about kids being put in these rooms where they're, you know, they're having trouble breathing and they're crying out for their parents. You know, now the lawmakers are talking about that, making that illegal nationally because of these stories. These are stories that matter. These are stories that change laws that make people's lives better. Some of the reporting that was done on the child welfare and the poor little boy in McHenry County who died, and there was heartbreaking stories that was done by Christy Gutowski on that case. And you know, this is the sort of thing that matters. And so people are not saying, oh, I should go leave and get a better job. They want to continue doing this because they want to help their community, and this is what's at stake.
Yeah, and in the seclusion room story that was by I think Jennifer Smith Richards and Jody Cohen over at ProPublica, I mean, that changed state law literally overnight. The governor signed an emergency order to change the law. Basically, when he set down his Tribune, he picked up his pen. I mean, that is actually how it went down. And the challenging thing with buyouts at this point is, as Mary sort of alluded to, the people who are left behind are people who have looked long and hard at the idea of doing something else with their life that is probably more lucrative and less stressful. And they have decided that, no, that this is something that's deeply important and it matters to my communities and I'm good at it. And this is where my heart and my skills are. And you're asking really at this point, the true believers to give up. And these are the people who are doing the best possible work and working the absolute hardest and making the kind of changes like Mary just alluded to. So it's demoralizing because it feels like the bottom of the barrel has already been scraped and now they're kind of trying to take it apart, you know, for slats.
Let's talk about the 8 years. 8 years is in... That's baby. I mean, I'm old. Okay, I admit it, but that's like baby time. 8 years.
Barely qualify.
Yeah, Charlie, man.
Yeah,
8 years. That's nothing.
Right. It does. I've been in buyout situations where they ask for people for 20 years or 15 years, and these were people like, oh, you know, I'm on the verge of retiring, but I want to do some more freelance, and so I'll take a little bit of money and I'll go do something else. Yeah, 8 years is nothing, and that's one of the things that's been so demoralizing, because this suggests that they're trying to go really deep.
The fat was long ago cut. We're talking about the lean and the bone at this point.
And let's also set the context. This is a political talk show. Mary and Charlie, we talk politics all the time. And so I'm just going to point out that the President of the United States is freely waged war with many media outlets. When there's a news story that he objects to, he takes to Twitter, blasts them. Fake news is something we hear a lot about. The media is under siege. And conversely, many of my friends of the leftist persuasion, myself included, are still ranting and railing about the CNN debate that just went down. And they're what we call biases. So it's a turbulent time, a tumultuous time for media in general. The notion Mary, that a newspaper, let's just keep it with a newspaper, represents an independent voice or independent view, free of government, to critically cover government, to criticize the president of the United States, to criticize the mayor of the city of Chicago. There's a great tradition in Chicago of, I could speak to this, of criticizing the mayor of the city of Chicago. And this is a threat if the Tribune is cut to the bone.
Right. There's, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, the king is a fink. But it's another thing to investigate and look into the king's records and find out exactly why the king is a fink and present that to the public. So the newspaper, this takes work, this takes skill, this takes experience, this takes resources. This is more than can be done by you know, one person sitting in their basement, you know, maybe, you know, working at a bakery part-time. Nothing against people who are doing that. But, you know, this is why we need these newspapers, so that they can do this kind of hard, incisive work to present real news, not fake news. And this is why it's so important right now to protect this.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mary said it really well. I just an example, you know, we've speaking specifics about the paper should invest in newsrooms, it should invest in journalists. And it's, you know, that sounds great. What does that mean? One of the things, and this is just a personal opinion that I think has been great, is the New York Times has their daily podcast, which is now one of the most popular in the world. It's a very lucrative source of revenue for them now. And what they've done is they've put their own reporters in front of a microphone for 20 or 30 minutes explaining what the story is, breaking it down in an easy to understand fashion. They have someone ask them questions about the news gathering process. You get to hear about their experience and how these stories come together, how they made certain decisions. They're sort of, you know, opening the tent a little bit and giving people a window into the news gathering process in a way that I think is very healthy, in a way that makes the journalists who are doing the reporting seem like more than just bylines, more than just sort of like the voice of God beaming down, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. what happened at the debate, you know, tonight. And it's a really successful project. And what that takes is a host, a team of producers, a bunch of fancy equipment, training for all these, you know, old time newspaper reporters who are now going out and having to try and get audio along the way while they're doing their stories. Marketing budget. I mean, it's not a chicken or an egg question. You know, the money, the investment comes first, and the quality product, which then becomes a source of future revenues and future marketing, comes second. And so when, you know, again, cash goes to shareholders, that's cash that's not building a podcast studio. You know, that's cash that's not training reporters. That's cash that's not, you know, poaching someone from WBEZ, you know, for example. Not that I would ever condone such a thing. And, you know, we can't, you know, maybe poach your producer and take him with us.
Dr. D, he's there for the poaching. Go right. ahead, yeah.
And if you look, and the New York Times is a great example because they're making
very
money.
Very successful.
Yeah. They're doing well. They're
very
having
successful.
A great year. The Washington Post is doing well. All of the newspaper companies where the money is being spent in the newsroom, they're hiring new reporters. They're trying innovative things. They're doing well. So here's an example that people can draw from instead of this strip mining example.
Well, that two things I want to say before I ask my next question, just say one thing about Michael Farrell.
Please do.
Okay, but I'm going to say something nice about the guy. My only encounter with him, this gets to the point, when Farrell was at the Sun-Times when the Sun-Times bought the Reader. This is ancient media history. And we were all ushered from the Reader to meet Farrell. 2012, I remember, because it was the same day that the teachers were marching through the city of Chicago and during their strike. Anyway, or the lead up to the strike. The point is, met him, and so I asked him, I go, so what are you going to do when I write another column critical of Mayor Rahm, who was buddies with him, are you going to, you know, what are you going to do? And he said, to his credit, if the mayor calls to complain, I'll tell him to get a better press person. In other words, I'm going to leave you alone. And he left me alone, and I hammered away around forever. He deserved every hammer. But so I give him credit for that, okay? The sale of his shares of Tribune, I can't give him credit for that because it puts it in the hands of this company that has this terrible reputation. And this leads me to ask this question. What is the end game? Like, why would somebody spend all this money to buy a newspaper if you don't have, like, like a desire to make a name for yourself, breaking stories, or if you don't want to encourage the investigation to what's going on, if you don't think you have like a greater public a service or mission, like some Mary, you know this, you know the history of Chicago. There's always been crusading publishers on one end of the spectrum or the other, some right, some left. And if that's not motivating you, and you're not interested, as Charlie said, in building your product by hiring new employees to do podcasts and various kinds of new ventures, then what is the end game?
I would think they're not talking to me, so I don't know. But I would think trying to get as much money out of it as you can, and then selling it to someone who's willing to pay more.
Yeah, they're treating it like a financial instrument is what it is. They want to slash the cost, raise the price, take the short-term profit margin, perhaps lever the company up with debt. If there were real estate assets, they would want to spin those off and sell them, and then kick this distressed asset down the road to the next guy. There's a lot of ways to make money while destroying the thing that produces that money in, you know, the modern American financial system. One potentially instructive example is we were talking before the show, in the case of the Denver Post, they took profits that were made by the paper, hard-won profits, you know, a paper that has its struggles just like every other media organization, and invested that money that rightfully belonged to the Denver Post, to the people who worked there, and invested it in Greek sovereign debt and a real estate company in Mexico that I believe settled the largest ever fraud suit in the history of the country, something in the tens of millions of dollars. So that was a case where they took the profits from a newspaper and they used it for their own scheme is one word. Investment is another word. It kind of depends, I guess, on your perspective. They're also being investigated by the federal government for double dipping with employee pensions, basically investing their employee pension dollars, which should be sacrosanct and very carefully stewarded in their own firm. I don't think we have a resolution to that case now, but the federal government's given them a good hard look. So I think they're interested in using these companies, which they view as attainable for discount prices because of the state of the industry, to create short-term value, money, cash. And then they don't really care what happens. So
right,
when they're
done. It's merger and acquisition until the companies run out of value. It's a higher or a lower grade of capitalism than I can understand.
You mentioned real estate assets. Are there any real estate assets that the Tribune currently holds? I have a hard time keeping up with the wheeling and dealing of properties every time the Tribune is sold. Or
right. Well, there's more than just, of course, Chicago. There's all these different entities that the Tribune has in the East Coast, and there are certainly real estate properties out there. Of course, we've already lost the Tribune Tower, so there's not that to play with anymore. Mm-hmm.
But very bizarre. Just to take a moment to think about that, the Tribune Towers was one of the most, just a sign of the devolution of newspapers in the city of Chicago.
World's largest metaphor.
World's right. Large. I mean, Tribune Towers, man. Is that what it's going to be? A condo or is
condos,
that
baby?
Condos.
Yeah.
Wow.
I haven't been able to look at it. You know.
Yeah.
It's somebody that I used to know.
Well,
that's an example of you know, in the view of the staff, I should say, the mismanagement of and the mistreatment, in the sense that when we came out of bankruptcy. Essentially, the short version is there were two companies that were spun off. One had a bunch of debt and paid a dividend to the other. We're in the one with a bunch of debt. And the other, which had the most profitable businesses, also got all the real estate assets. And eventually that was sold to a developer who, after our lease ran up, said, you got to go. So that building is being redeveloped. It's being turned into expensive condos. And the paper, the staff of the paper, hasn't seen a dime for it. It's not as if, you know, we made the tough decision. It's like, hey, we got to sell our cool building because that's just, you know, them's the breaks. That was a decision that was made by someone very high up, and the staff hasn't benefited from it.
It's not like they took the money and they said, all right, here's that podcast.
Exactly.
You were asking for.
Exactly. It wasn't as if they made a tough decision to get rid of a cool but more valuable as condos asset. As a means to keep the paper going strong.
Well, as bad as that is, I'm going to say that the one involving my beloved Chicago Sun-Times is worse. My beloved Bright One used to be right there on the banks of the Chicago River.
I was
before
there.
You were born, Charlie. You worked at the Bright One?
I was when there was... for 2 months when it was still there before we moved over to the merchandise
old Sun-Times building.
The old Sun-Times building right there on the banks of the Chicago River. It was sold to a company named Trump, and they put a huge tower up. So I would submit to you, to paraphrase the great Harold Washington, I would submit to you that the sale of the property that once housed my beloved Chicago Sun-Times and equally beloved Chicago Daily News, now owned by Trump, is even worse than the sale of Tribune Towers for condos. So I don't know. We could discuss that one and debate that one.
Whatever happened to that Trump guy?
Yeah, whatever happened to that Trump guy? Fake news. All right. So what can people do? We hear about this, there's a sense of a lot of people feel like, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. This company is just going to strip mine, twist arms into buying out, quitting great careers before they should be discarded. What can the public do, in your humble opinion?
What I tell people all the time is please subscribe. Whether you get a digital subscription or a print subscription, for one thing, it's good for you as a citizen of mm-hmm. the city because it informs you about how to vote, you know, what's going on in your city, and it makes you a better citizen. It makes you a more well-rounded person, and it helps the newspaper. And the other thing that you can do is write letters. Write letters to the editor. You know, put it in a stamped envelope if you want to do it that way. And tell them that this is what I value. I value these columnists. I value these stories. This paper helps me improve my life. Please, please keep it a quality product.
Yeah, I would echo that. Subscriptions are enormously helpful. They're going to sustain us for the long term. If you value the product, please subscribe. And you can get a deal for the first few months if you just want to,
incredibly
kick the tires on it. Yeah, it's a great price for what you get.
Wait, hold on, a deal? They don't tear me about
this. This is
that.
Not sponsored content. I legitimately believe this. This is my honest opinion. That's number one. If you don't want to write a stamp letter, if you just go ahead and Google Chicago Tribune Guild, you can pull up our website and it'll have contacts or people that you can write notes of support to. You can follow us on social media. Give us a little signal boost. We're at CT Guild on Twitter. We've got a Facebook page if you want to stay in touch with us. And talk to people about this kind of thing. You know, it word of mouth is the best possible marketing. And if you are reading the paper and you see something that really stands out to you, that moves you, that you think is important, that makes you angry because of how your tax dollars are being spent or how a certain, let's say, elected official happens to be cavorting at the time, share it on social media. Send it to someone who you think would like it. Send it to someone you think would get angry about it. Support us in that way. Those things do make a difference, and they really do add up over time.
And I think people have to be careful of there's an awful lot of cynicism about the media, both on the left and the right. People saying, oh, the mainstream media, you know, they're always telling lies and they're only supporting corporations, they're only supporting liberals or whatever it is. We're actually dealing with facts here. We're doing real journalism, and this is something that can help you and help our democracy. So please support us.
Yeah. There is a lot of cynicism toward the media, and half the time I'm the one talking with the cynical point of view. Having said that, as I always point out, subscribed to three newspapers, home delivery every day. I'm the old school. I still follow news.
Yeah. What do you do with the plastic bags? I haven't figured that out. I usually use them for lunch.
I just ate a sandwich. Dennis Sos.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I had a cheese.
He was eating a sandwich literally wrapped in a blue. Was that a Tribune bag?
No, that was a New York Times bag.
That was a Times
bag?
But
it could have been a Tribune. Yeah. The Tribune bags are light blue. I could do a whole thing on bags and newspapers come in. By the way, have you had any, are you talking to reporters for Tribune operations in other cities? Do they have some of the same concerns?
Yeah, we're in touch with our, you know, union brothers and sisters all over the country, pretty much on a daily basis. We're coordinating our efforts in terms of negotiating with the company. We want to know what's going on with our other newsrooms. That's been kind of an interesting thing, too, is it sort of brought a lot of the various newspapers together in a way that's beneficial for the work. People can collaborate and talk and things like that.
We recently sent a letter talking about our deep disgust at the current situation that we have. And it was signed by the Chesapeake News Guild, Hartford Current, Baltimore Sun, Chicago Tribune. We're all together in fighting for our newspapers.
Wow, these are all great newspapers. When I came out of college, just the thought that they'd be on. It's like the notion that Tribune Towers would be a condominium complex. You know, and it was just unthinkable. But that's where we're at. And one more time, Charlie or Mary, give out a website where folks can contact you, or if they want more information, give that out again.
Yeah, if you want more information, if you want to support us, if you want to kind of just follow along as we run down this road, if you just simply Google Chicago Tribune Guild, which would be the first thing that comes up, you can follow us on Twitter. We do every Friday, we do a thread of some of the best work that we've put out in the given week. That's at CT Guild. We've got a Facebook page as well. And if you want to write notes or letters of support to management, you can find all that contact information and subscription information at the website.
Anything you want to add, Mary?
Those are all good things to do, so please help us out here.
All right, very good. Mary, Charlie, thank you so much for coming on. And I'll probably bring you back. Like I said, I don't make no bones about it. I'm with you guys 100%. I'm a old-time newspaper reader, and I do believe we are better off with the independent news media, even if I disagree with the editorials that they may write.
Don't write the editorials.
Yes, but I'm just talking about in general, or the tone of the questions they ask. I do believe we're better off with a healthy, at least two. I love the fact we had two daily newspapers in Chicago, the Sun-Times and the Tribune.
Yeah, we should stay that way. It makes the work better and it makes the city better.
All right. Thank you very much, Charlie. Thank you very much, Mary. It's another bonus show and Ben Jarofsky Show. Take care, everybody.